Hello, and welcome to the Customer Onboarding Podcast brought to you by TaskRay. I'm your host, Jamie Cole, Chief of Staff at TaskRay. And on each episode, I'll sit down with customer onboarding leaders to uncover the leading strategies, playbooks, and secrets to ensuring customer onboarding success within the first 90 to 120 days. I'm so excited for you to join us and listen to these industry leaders as we learn together how to be customer onboarding gurus. It's my pleasure to welcome Ashvin Vaidyanathan, Chief Customer Officer at Gainsight. Today, Ashvin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here.
Ashvin, you've had an amazing career in customer success at Gainsight over the last few years, rising from Senior Director of Customer Success to VP of Customer Success, and finally as Chief Customer Officer. How have you seen onboarding take shape as a specialization within the customer success industry over your tenure?
Yeah, I've been, I can say I've been in the right place at the right time and pretty lucky in my career, pre-Gainsight and at Gainsight. So, generally I've been in the customer facing world. And what I've seen in my working career is, like, actually onboarding is almost the most critical moment in the customer journey. It's the first time that customers interact with someone from your company. It's the first process, big process that they go through where they come to a realization that what they actually paid for and expected from the software provider actually translates into things that they can touch and feel and experience. And that entire process is part of that customer onboarding or customer, the implementation that companies go through. So very, very critical part. And in my experience, people don't focus enough on getting onboarding right and instead focus on ladder parts of the customer journey, including customer success and adoption and expansion and renewal conversations. But if I was to give one recommendation to my peers and CEOs and CROs within company, it would be to focus 100% of their energies for a quick period of time on onboarding, get that to a place that can deliver the right type of onboarding experience to customers in a predictable and consistent way across many different use cases and many different customer types before moving on to other parts of the business. Super important to get onboarding right.
Great. So you've had amazing perspective over the past few years on trends and onboarding across your customer portfolio. And I would really love to dig into those insights today. So to start, I would love to learn more about what you've seen are the most successful traits for onboarding programs and teams. If we could just focus in on the team part of it first, how do you go about recruiting an onboarding team and organizing an onboarding team within the larger customer success organization?
Yeah, very good question. When I've seen really good onboarding teams, like a few common patterns or a few common traits that I observe. One, it's always beneficial to have the onboarding team report into the same organization that houses technical support and your customer success managers. And the reason all of these the reason I say all of them should report into one person, whether that's a VP, SVP, Chief Customer Officer, Chief Revenue Officer, whatever you may call the title, but super important that they're all housed and reporting into the same person is because each one of them has an impact on the other team's role and performance. And hence, super critical that someone has a remit and a vision on all of these roles and the journey that a customer goes through across all of these roles. So that's one from organizationally where it should be housed. And then as you design the processes for onboarding and as you start recruiting, typically what I've noticed is it's super important to segment your customers even for your onboarding programs. Not all customers are built the same. Not all of them expect the same level of complexity and the multiple things that your product could do. And not all of them have the same budgets in order to pay for something like an onboarding program. So the most common segmentation that I've seen is thinking of like super simple t-shirt sizing, small, medium, large, or thinking of it as like an SMB, mid-market and enterprise type program. What SMBs and smaller companies want from you is quick time to value. They want a lot of transparency in what the pricing actually looks like. And what they want is more of get us up and running and we'll worry about change management and all of the other good stuff at some later point in time. And they want a lot of prescription from you. So when designing onboarding programs and hiring for SMB type programs, hire people who can, I guess more technical people who can quickly get something up and running, people who can project manage really well, because they're probably managing many small customers at the same time when it comes to onboarding. So folks who have that type of a skill set are super valuable. And generally, I would recommend from a packaging pricing standpoint, the SMB one should be small, very limited in scope, and is very prescriptive in what you will give. So you're not spending time back and forth on what to do in that package itself. The other end of the spectrum is your enterprise onboarding, which is in a lot of cases completely bespoke for every customer that you're implementing it with. And those companies actually care about telling you what they do today so that you can convert that into things in your product. And they're also interested in then combining that with prescription from you as a vendor or a software provider. And at the end, they're also interested in education programs, change management. You're rolling out something, make that process stick as part of the onboarding journey. So the typical people that you would hire into that role would be folks who've worked with large enterprises, who know how to creatively problem solve across a CIO who's interested in solving certain problems, a CFO who's interested in keeping budgets under control, the business leader who has certain objectives in mind, people who have worked in those enterprise type settings and who are used to the bureaucracies and the complexities of a large enterprise. And in those cases, I wouldn't go with a packaged offering, a fixed packaged offering right out of the bat. I would use more of a custom scoping based approach for those type of onboarding programs.
So that is a wonderful, amazingly detailed answer with some really good meaty information. I have a question for you because I've talked to a few people while doing this podcast. What do you think about giving SMB and mid-market companies the opportunity to buy into an enterprise level? Or, you know, if you have that delineation between, hey, this is what SMB and mid-market get, giving them the opportunity to buy into what an enterprise client would get.
Yes, it's a great question. What I've seen is, one, I think that you should allow for that flexibility. But typically, I would recommend that flexibility going upwards and not downwards, meaning your enterprise shouldn't have the option of buying a smaller package. Because what I've seen is they are a large enterprise, and even if they think they could do with a smaller package, the experience that they get from a smaller package doesn't solve their problems, in which case you as a vendor will basically have to then manage that risk and go in and invest time anyways. But I totally am with you that a smaller company could choose to buy into a larger package if their needs are different. You lead with your recommendation, but give them the option to buy up into the program.
So this is one of the things that we get asked about all the time at TaskRay, and I think it is probably the one thing that everyone wants the golden ticket to. It's about metrics and how to determine if your onboarding program is working. So from your perspective, what are the top three metric-driven outcomes successful onboarding teams should be looking at?
Excellent question. I think it's a combination of a couple of things. So professional services and onboarding teams have always, I mean, they've been in existence since software has existed, right? Like, and even services has been in existence for a long time. There are certain metrics that any strong professional services organization or onboarding organization needs to keep into account. It would include stuff like your utilization of the teammates that you have on the team. It would include, from a company standpoint, it would include the P&L of what you scoped for and how far are you from the scoping and everything else. All of those are should continue to be critical parts of your professional services metrics. The things that most onboarding programs don't then include, actually, then the next level would be some programs also include this customer satisfaction or net promoter score type metrics of, yes, we managed this entire thing as per plan, and the experience working with our team was also good. I've seen a lot of professional services organization onboarding teams actually do that piece as well. What they don't do is a third type of metric, which you can call as outcomes metrics. This is the notion that the goal of onboarding is not just to complete the statement of work or complete the checklist of activities, but beyond that, is it actually achieving the outcome that the customer wanted from you? And so the outcome of an onboarding program should be, for example, 80% of the users logging in and doing the activities that you wanted them to on a daily basis or weekly basis or monthly basis, depending upon your product. You shouldn't exit onboarding till those metrics are satisfied. And so that's a very different way of thinking about onboarding. And it now starts bleeding into what customer success management actually is, which I'm seeing leading edge companies start to institute. We at Gainsight do this as well, where a project cannot be closed till we achieve a minimum level of adoption of the platform. And so it is in the best interest of the onboarding team to design their methodology and scope to take into account certain weeks of coaching and training and education so that they achieve those adoption outcomes. And it helps the customer success teams because now they're getting a much healthier customer coming out of onboarding than they would have otherwise got. And so it's a nice friction that we've self-instituted so that those two teams achieve mutual outcomes. And it's great for the customer as well.
That's great. Fantastic. So what role do you think product teams play in the onboarding process? And how have you seen this increase over the last few years?
Very good question. Product is the most scalable onboarding and customer success organization there is, right? So ideally, your product is designed in a way that you, I'm being facetious, but ideally the product is designed in a way where you don't even need an onboarding. It should be like Apple, you getting an iPhone and being able to set it up yourself by just seeing instructions on the screen. The ambitious goal for every organization should obviously be to get there. Obviously, in business-to-business software, it's not as easy as that because there's lots of complexities and change management and integrations and all of that good stuff that go into onboarding. And so the way to cross that gap between the product not doing anything and the product doing everything in onboarding is tight communications between the product team and the onboarding and customer success organization. So examples of that would be on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, the onboarding team discussing projects that didn't go well and projects where the timeline to actual value was much higher than what they had originally scoped for. And then coming to the product team to share learnings for what they would recommend changes be in the product that can actually reduce the time to value for customers and hence much better delivery times for the onboarding team as well. That is one area that can be helpful. The other thing that can be helpful from a product standpoint is then if there are common set of things that a human being is doing in the onboarding checklist, the professional services or onboarding team can take those common things, go to the product team and actually have them build a wizard or a guide directly in the product that that the customer can then start working on even before a human being from the onboarding team reaches out to them. Right. So doing more in the product, getting checklists in the product, guides in the product, wizards in the product is an area that product can contribute to in a big way. Those are at least two examples that I'm seeing companies do.
So this is, last year I was actually managing the product team at TaskRay, and we did start to work much more closely with customer success, which houses our support and onboarding as well. And one of the things that I saw was that there's a natural tension between the two groups around solving one or two specific things versus creating a solution that is more applicable across the board. How do you recommend the two teams approach each other, even philosophically, to understand how to give and get in that naturally kind of friction environment?
Yeah, so I wish I had a silver bullet for you with that answer, with that question. I think some of it is like, it's like with most things, most tough questions, there is a carrot and a stick-based approach. The carrot-based approach, or the ideal way to solve this equation, would be the head of onboarding and the head of product agreeing on mutual metrics at the beginning of the year and saying, at the end of the day, we are both invested in customers adopting new features and new products that you're releasing, which is great for the head of product, and customers going finding more value as quickly as possible, which is great for the onboarding team. These are two things which don't have to be at odds with each other. And ideal would be the two heads of these two functions agreeing on common metrics that overlap across both of these outcomes. That could be time to adoption of a new feature. You could start with something like that. And each team has a stake in like metrics that they both sign up for, and you make something like this happen. The top-down way to solve this would be like making things scalable solutions for onboarding, et cetera, in the product and simplifying the product be one of your CEO's or the company's top two or five charters that you're focused on for the year, which is almost like a mandate to basically say, I don't need you two to talk to each other and figure this out. I'm telling you that this is a big priority for the company. Depending on where you are as an organization and culture and how quickly you need some of this done, I've seen both approaches be employed.
Great. I find that one that's a big gnarly topic. I love hearing different
people. It is a gnarly topic.
So how have you seen the onboarding function change over the last few years?
More and more onboarding teams are starting to measure things that are beyond the usual statement of work or checklist-based approaches that I mentioned earlier. They're starting to measure adoption as part of the entire change management as they think about it. The other way that I'm seeing onboarding teams evolve is thinking of their charter is not just onboarding, but even starting to think of standalone offerings that can be given to customers after onboarding. So onboarding doesn't end with onboarding is the message. Like if you need additional help, like you've rolled it out to one cohort of users and you want to roll this out to another cohort of users, or maybe another persona. You've rolled it out to CSMs, but now you want to roll something out to the sales team. It never ends. Ideally, your solution that you're selling into a customer is a living and breathing organism. And so you're constantly doing more and more and more things in the product, in which case there is a need for like continuous onboarding or continuous services that you should be thinking about. So a lot of onboarding leaders are starting to thinking of their role as services and ways that they can contribute to customer success even beyond the initial launch or initial onboarding. That's another piece that I'm seeing as part of the process.
So what new characteristics have developed within the increase in digital transformation?
Because of the digital transformation, you now have the ability to not just interact with customers by email necessarily. During onboarding and post onboarding, now you can actually interact with customers in product itself throughout the customer journey. And so in-app messaging, understanding customer effort scores in certain parts of the product, those are vehicles that companies now have because they've gone from a completely on-premise type solution and getting digitally transformed into a cloud-based solution, et cetera. And so that is a a new channel of communication that was never applicable in the prior world, which is now completely open in the new world. And it's so much more contextual. You can easily categorize a user as a particular type of user who is in a particular part of the journey and make the messages very contextual to that person, which is obviously a huge power that no marketer or product rep or onboarding rep had in the past, but also comes with the responsibility of not spamming your users, right? So both with great power comes great responsibility, for sure.
It's a more, it would be very jarring if you were spamming someone within the product itself. You lose a lot of trust with the end user that way.
Exactly right.
So this is a really interesting question, especially given everything that's going on in the world right now, where I feel like a lot of companies are on hiring freezes or even in a layoff or furlough cycle because of the pandemic. But how has the recruitment changed for onboarding professionals, the tactics over the last several months, maybe excluding since we got into the pandemic?
Yeah, totally. Like, the notion of empathy is such a critical, we're a customer success software company, right? So making customers successful is the reason to exist for us. And we have a very stated mission, directly starting with the CEO and then permeating to everyone in the organization. Our purpose is to win in business by being human first. And we think of both of those as like critical parts, and they're not at odds with each other. So starting with the hiring cycle and recruiting cycle, we look for people with a lot of empathy, who've demonstrated taking tough decisions with a human first mindset in their past life, et cetera. So starts with that hiring cycle. And another a value for us as a company is childlike joy. We try to bring that into every onboarding cycle as well. A simple example, very timely now with Easter, is at the end of onboarding, we would do an exercise with the end users to basically have an Easter egg hunt in the product. So we would have an example question saying, find a customer that has 500K in ARR and has a green health score in the product. And so that would be the Easter egg that every user who's getting trained has to go find. So we'll bring some childlike joy like that to our onboarding cycles, which is our little way of bringing the human firstness into onboarding.
Man, I love that. That's so fun. And so that's kind of how you guys seek to bring in people on your team, not even just specifically with onboarding, but the whole company. But for onboarding, that's important, obviously. What if you look across all the folks that you've known in your career who have been exceptional onboarding leaders, what would be the one or two or three, however many traits you think they have in common?
A few traits that I would say are common across like really good onboarding teammates would be, the first one is digging deep even before starting an engagement, an onboarding engagement, being interested in knowing what the client's business model actually is, what their business outcomes are. You cannot recommend anything in onboarding if you don't understand what the company is going through, what your customer is going through, what are the ways they make money, and what are the big opportunities and threats in their business. So many of public companies have all of this information in their investor reports, et cetera. And for private companies, they've gone through a multi-month long sales cycle where the sales team has identified and dug into so many of these things already. So good onboarding reps take the time to understand the customer's context, their business model, their business objectives to begin with. That's number one. Through the onboarding journey, good onboarding teammates always keep the customer's perspective in mind. It's not just about closing out the project or closing out the onboarding. What risks, what sentimentalities are the customers going through throughout the customer onboarding journey is another thing that really good onboarding reps keep in mind. And they will flag some of those types of risks very proactively. I think part three would be they don't try to solve that on their own. They're really good onboarding teammates will not think of themselves as the hero that's going to save every problem at the customer, but they'll bring the entire company's resources to bear. So if it needs the CCO to get on a phone and solve the problem, that so be it. If it needs the CIO at your company to get on the phone with the CIO of the other company, so be it. If you need the CEO to get on the phone to solve a problem, so be it. Like, everything is at your disposal and you're not alone in solving the customer's problem. And then the fourth one I'll call out is what we spoke about, which is keep empathy and human first type approach. You're not dealing with a customer, you're dealing with people at the customer, and those people have lives outside of work and they have lives at work. You might have a really rough call, but give that person the benefit of doubt that they probably had a really rough day at home, and hence it's not personal. Like, they are coming at it with some of the dependencies that they have going on in their life. So give people the benefit of doubt and empathize with what they might be going through, and you might not know what that is, and that's okay.
Especially in the current environment that we're in.
Totally right.
You know, it's
so true.
Everyone's getting a crash course in what Gainsight's values have been already on how to just, you know, we're all humans in this together, so.
Hey listeners, we'll get back to the show in a minute, but first I wanted to ask you a question. Is your handoff process between sales and customer success repeatable, scalable, and optimized around your customer outcome? Could your process use some work? Check out our webinar, Mastering the Post-Sale Handoff, available on our website at taskray.com. Let's get back to the show.
Gainsight is hyper-focused on delivering an exceptional customer experience while achieving desired outcomes. What role does onboarding play in your overall customer journey?
Like, I actually see onboarding as being super critical to the rest of the customer journey. Like, onboarding can, if done right, onboarding can accelerate outcomes. It can make the customer feel that what they actually subscribe to with Gainsight is exactly what they're getting. And they have more credibility, more faith in the company, in Gainsight, if we get the first part of that journey really well. So onboarding is hugely, hugely important for us in the way we think about things. I spend almost 40 to 50% of my own personal time and mind space thinking about ways that we can actually optimize our onboarding journey. And so that is such a big part of my charter, and that's such a big part of my global VP of services who runs the onboarding team. We spend hours thinking about how to make this even better than what we currently do.
So this is, there's this paper, I'm not sure if you've read it. It's from the Marketing Sciences Institute. And it basically, they did a scientific research paper about how across different industries, onboarding actually is the most highly leveraged activity you can do post sale. And it has like 5 to 10 times the value of any other activity. And also, if you don't get it quite right, it will decrease your chances of having success down the road. And they did it across banks and retail, and it held true. The one thing that I found really interesting about it was they said you have a fixed number of interactions that your customer is willing to have with you in that time period before they actually start to get annoyed or their mental model of you starts to go down. My question to you is, especially since you're so intimately knowledgeable about creating the customer experience, how do you guys figure out how many interactions are the right number of interactions and what mix of interactions from a face-to-face like a Zoom or an email or in product even? And how are you monitoring that?
A very good question. I haven't read the report from Marketing Sciences, but I will try to dig it up and see. It's fascinating. The way to think about this is not just for onboarding, but throughout the customer journey. We have a point of view that there are, from a customer experience standpoint, there are some non-negotiable meetings or events or outreaches engagements with the customer that every company needs to do with their customers. Let's call them moments of truth. And those moments of truth are when customers like experience some big transformation. An example of a moment of truth in our daily consumer lives is when we run into a billing issue with our credit card, or with seat changes on an airline, and you actually go and have that conversation. That's a moment of truth in the business to consumer type world. The same thing holds true in the business to business world, where the first call that you do after a prospect becomes a customer, where you're talking about your entire methodology, what to expect over the next few days, next few weeks, et cetera. Like, that is a critical juncture. When your users log in for the first time in the product that you're rolling out, that's a moment of truth, et cetera. So at the highest level, we think of making sure that you call out the moments of truth that are super important in your business. And then there are the other meetings that, even if they fall off, you should be fine, but you have to make sure that the customer experience and the moments of truth are completely consistent and rock solid. That is one big area to focus on. And then the second thing I'll call out is, actually, I'm not sure if there is one fixed number of meetings or interactions that are right or wrong. I think you call that out directly in the scoping process when you're going through the sales cycle to say, look, here are three flavors, and you customers should choose which flavor makes most sense to you based on your culture, needs, et cetera. We think you should be in flavor two because of what we know about you, but doesn't mean you don't have the options of flavor one and three. Flavor one could be like completely on site. We will be there on site 24/5 or whatever, you know, like we'll be there every day with you, and we are going to be an extension of your company. And the other one is completely digital, where we won't bother you. We let you read docs and you come to us and we'll solve your problem when you can't solve something on your own. And you have like companies that could choose any end of this, anywhere in that spectrum. So have that flexibility built into your model for the non-negotiables, for the non-negotiable moments of truth, those are like, you have to do it the way you think you need to do it with those customers, because those can make or break your onboarding and post-onboarding.
Yeah, we just ran a workshop in Colorado before everything happened, when we could still be face-to-face. And one of the topics at our roundtable was around that exactly. We called it high touch, low touch, and what is the of high touch, low touch. It's obviously super dependent on your product and the customer, but there's usually a blend of it, a little bit of high touch, low touch, no matter what.
That's right. Totally right.
So you talked about this a little, but I love the Gainsight culture so much. Every Gainsight event I've ever been to has just made me feel so happy and filled up. And so your values really come through in real life too. And I feel like,
thank you. Yes. Appreciate it.
But I would love to hear a little bit more about how you guys have put the human centric or human first ethos specifically when implementing the onboarding process.
Yes. So human first, as you said, is like our purpose statement. So it permeates into everything that we do, including onboarding. And so a few ways that we are doing that more broadly is, one, throughout the onboarding journey, we've got this notion of stakeholder alignment. So we make sure that multiple people in the company are talking to the different levels of sponsors at the customer. So people from Gainsight will be mapped to sponsors at the customers across the hierarchy. And so we make sure that we are connecting with multiple of those people to make sure that everyone's input is being factored into how the onboarding process is going. Everyone has a very different view of how the onboarding process is going. And there is no one right answer, because as I said, you're dealing with a with people, not with a customer or a company. And so super important that you're plugged into these multiple voices and make sure that everyone is having the optimal experience that you want for them. So that is a big part of what we do in onboarding and then post onboarding as well. The second one, as I said, like childlike joy is a major part of what we do during onboarding. So that I explain, I give you an example of what we do at launch. But even during UAT, like a testing process before launch, in some cases, like we'll sponsor pizzas for the testing team members or something where like, hey, be invested in making this super successful throughout this process. From a human first standpoint, what we've seen is over multiple implementations over the history of Gainsight, we've seen that if the actual users are part of the sausage making, for lack of a better term, the entire onboarding process, like defining what should go into Gainsight versus not. If there are actual users that are part of that process, it actually sticks and that change management is much easier when they explain why they've built certain things in Gainsight. And so we've now instituted that all enterprise implementations at least should have representation from, we sell to CSMs, and so CSMs should be part of the onboarding process itself. A small subset of them representing almost like ambassadors for the entire user base that is then gonna get into using Gainsight. So that's another way that we think about bringing that human first and change management mindset into the mix.
So this is the thing that I also find really fascinating about having something. It's a bold value to say humans first, because obviously a lot of business people are like, you know, it's only money that matters. But and this flips it around. I'm interested in knowing how having human first values actually, what kind of business benefit it brings to you from a client vendor relationship or even just in general business health.
Yeah, again, excellent question. I think part of why companies want to do business with any vendor is one, the product, of course. Like, I mean, it has to solve certain outcomes for you. But there are generally many solutions that you have that can solve the same problem. So the thing that differentiates you versus everyone else who can try to solve the same problem is something different about the culture and the values that you bring into that partnership. And so in general, both in increasing the odds of winning prospects, converting them to customers, we generally see that people want to do business with a company that values the human first ethos versus others that are more transactional in nature. So right from the get-go, we see a much higher win rate than any other competitive solution or even other ways to solve that problem, for sure. The second thing is we spend a lot of time in helping people who might be displaced from their jobs. Right now is such a critical time where CSMs, for example, and CS leaders are out of jobs because their companies are not doing well. We spend a lot of our energy as a product company, as a product software company. There is no, like, we go out of our way to make sure that the ecosystem is maintained and that we are a champion for the broader community. So we've, for example, as part of what we call as Gainsight Gives that we launched yesterday, we have a career hub for companies to just post if they're hiring. And it's also a great forum for CSMs and CS leaders to then go in there and check if what companies are hiring in their city or remote so that they can start applying. So we want to make that happen. We've, for example, given free curriculum for people who want to upskill their levels in the CSM world. And we've made that easier by, we have an online offering that we've now given for free over the next 6 months to everyone who's interested in up-leveling their skill set. Those are ways then that we are now starting to give back, even for companies that are going through onboarding, that option is available now. They can take advantage of training their CSMs on what they think are best practices, what we think are best practices throughout that process. So I think that the business benefit then becomes all of those people that we've now helped place go to companies and they have a very positive vision of what Gainsight is, even beyond the software itself. And people want to do business, especially millennials, but not stereotyping them in any way, but they're looking for not just transactional companies to interact with, but companies that actually believe in a value and a mission.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that that is definitely one of the great defining characteristics of the millennial generation.
Yeah.
So I have one last question for you, Ashwin.
Sure thing.
If you had one piece of advice for customer onboarding leaders, what would it be?
I will cheat and I'll give you two onboarding advices. One, for leaders of post-sales functions, CCOs, CROs, et cetera. If you have limited capacity, focus all your energies on optimizing your onboarding journey before any other part of the customer journey. That would look like call on companies that you think are going to be advocates for your onboarding journey, what worked. It's good to learn from things that are going well. Also call on customers that complained during the onboarding journey for things that didn't go well, and then start talking about what you can learn from both things that went well and things that didn't go well and optimize your journey. So that's one big advice that I would give. Everyone has limited hours in their day. I would say focus on getting onboarding right to a pretty awesome level. And then the second one I would say is throughout for actual practicing onboarding teammates and onboarding reps, start thinking of the outcomes that your customers want in the onboarding and not just what you've been asked to configure as part of your statement of work or your package definition. Put the human first lens, invest in learning your company's, your customers' business models, their objectives that they want to achieve, and treat all the stakeholders that you work with as humans and not just a customer, a label of a customer. So those would be two advice, one for leaders and one for practitioners on the day-to-day basis.
Fantastic. Well, Ashwin, thank you so much for your time today. This was a great talk. It was fascinating to hear all your, you have really specific advice, but also like a good big picture. So that's great.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, as you can tell, I'm passionate about it, and would love for all of us to be human first leaders.
I concur, human first.
Love it.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you have questions, comments, or want to share your top learning from today's episode, tweet us at TaskRay or message us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review on iTunes and let us know your favorite part. Until next time, you've been listening to the Customer Onboarding Podcast, brought to you by TaskRay, the customer onboarding success company.